Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Hey guys, this is going to be another great episode. And this gentleman, has been a friend of mine for a couple of years. He actually does the intros and outros to all my shows. So I want to thank him. He's a brother in arms. He's done some great things and he's doing some amazing things. So I just want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Michael Dobo, for everything you do for me. I want to thank our sponsor, JD Tierney of Southpaw Laser Concepts. He makes all my gear. He makes all my leather hats. So if you guys love swag, check out JD Tierney at Southpaw Laser Concepts. Michael, my brother, how are you doing today?
How's it going, Richard? Haven't seen or heard from you in a while. How's life treating you?
Life is great, brother. Got the new podcast up and running. Thank you so much for doing the intro and the outros.
Oh, it's fun.
So what's going on with you?
Just working, getting my artworks going. I lost my sight. I got one eye is completely blind. The left eye is going blind, but I'm adapting with eye loops and magnifying glasses and all this gear that I'm setting up. And so I decided to do a exit stage left and do some artworks. I'm getting back into voiceover work a little bit more now that I've got a longer term lease. I can set more things up, you know, not have to break them down all the time. So just starting to get settled in.
All right. So we're going to go because the last time we talked, we went into your childhood and we're not going to get into all that. But I want you to start from where you got out of the military, and then I want to talk about the fight that you're still fighting, but some of the victories you've gained over the last year. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, a little bit of your military career and then what happened with transitioning afterwards.
Well, I went through some pretty bad stuff towards the end of my military career. I saw some pretty bad things that were happening inside the unit. So, you know, I went after the unit on that. And unfortunately, it didn't work out well for me. So I had to figure things out in life without the help of my military benefits after being injured. So I'm still in a fight for that. Went through several divorces, went through several jobs, careers, schooling, really tried to stabilize life after military was really, really hard. I was very much addicted. I had some addictions going on because of what I saw in the military. I was trying to self-medicate quite a bit. I had to overcome, took me about 5 years after getting out of the military, it took me about 5 years to get away from drugs and alcohol, which was very difficult at the time.
Now, you know, I've talked to a lot of people now, and I found out that, you know, a lot of veterans, when they get out, guys or girls, first of all, they miss the camaraderie. Second of all, they miss not having a mission. And then third of all, you know, when we're in, sometimes, you know, we're all hooah hooah, but we still get coddled because we know we're going to get paid on the 1st and the 15th. We're going to get TRICARE and all that other good stuff. And then when you hit the streets, you know, like our friend Nick says, you know, the military doesn't give a shit about you. So talk to us about, you know, when you first got out of the military, what that transition was like.
You know, for me, unfortunately, I didn't have a normal military career like everybody else. You know, you have brothers and you have your job and your mission. I unfortunately, with me, because of what I saw and had to testify against in the whole works, it was more of a loss because I didn't feel I could serve my country in the best way I knew my life could. And so I had a real hard transition from knowing what I was supposed to do, knew my mission, knew that I had an oath to this country. And then all of a sudden, I'm a civilian and I'm having to figure shit out. And I'm very young at the time, too. I'm only in my early 20s, you know.
But now, back then, when you left the military, did you get a DD-214?
No, actually, I got, because of what I had seen, and I'm still in a fight for, yeah, I had to fight against the military. I've been fighting for 30 years. I was privy to some pretty bad things that the unit I was in was doing. And unfortunately, because I was so young and I was in the middle of training in the whole works, when I saw these things, you know, we take an oath in our country, right? As you know, all veterans know this, that we take an oath to defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And when a unit, it's hard for me to talk about. When a unit is transporting drugs, involved in human trafficking, and also in selling their weapons off to like gangbangers and people on the street, you have to report that. And so in doing so, I reported it and wound up in a living hell for a good 2 years after my military separation. I went through a hell of a lot in the military. And like I said, I'm still fighting it. I have the DOD forms saying I reported it, saying that I was in the military, stating that there was criminal activity in the unit and that they did find the findings that I was telling them. Unfortunately, because I was a whistleblower, it really messed up my life really, really well. I didn't get the benefits that everyone else gets. And I got pretty much railroaded. And I have permanent injuries from it. The people I had reported to, unfortunately, were involved. The top was involved all the way to the bottom. So when I reported it, they let loose those men on my family and myself, and it didn't turn out well. I was permanently injured. I was beaten. I was taken into a military hospital, Manigan Hospital, up in Fort Lewis, Washington, Olympia, Washington area, for 6 months and interrogated and tried to be convinced not tried to convince me that I didn't see what I saw and to recant my statement. I wouldn't. And I went through a lot of procedures. I call it torture, but procedures up in that hospital that were pretty intense. And I have been fighting it ever since. It was pretty bad. I saw a couple murders, things like that, that happened. So
how did you lose your eyesight?
I'm sorry?
How did you lose your eyesight?
Oh, my eyesight? I have fourth nerve degeneration. Unfortunately, years and years later, because of damage, I had been drowned twice during that whole, those whole incidences back in my early 20s, just getting out of the military. And because I drowned twice, it was part of the stuff I went through with them. I had a stroke and some brain issues later on in life, back in my late 40s. And because I had a major stroke, I had something called fourth nerve degeneration on one of my eyes. And then because of the diabetes, I had macular degeneration on the other eye. So I lost the one eye due to fourth nerve degeneration. It just one day woke up and it wasn't there no more. And which is a pretty hardcore mental thing to go through, you know, because your other eye goes also a sympathetic blindness for a while. So when it first went, it went completely. So, yeah, that's how I lost it.
So now, tell us, you know, how you survived, and tell us about your fight just getting Social Security.
Well, all started about 4 years ago. Social Security, you know, I had my stroke and heart attack in 2009. They put me on permanent Social Security disability back in 2009. And around 2016, for some reason, Social Security sends me a letter and says, you're suddenly cut off and we're investigating you because someone says you're faking your illness and your injuries and your disabilities and blah, 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 blah. It was pretty sudden. And I had been going through, you know, I was left side hemiplegic for a while. I was going through stroke therapy, the whole works. So, you know, I was just coming out of that. I mean, it took a while. And when they cut me off, it created such a financial devastation because I couldn't go back to work. I couldn't do my old career. I was an aerospace engineer at one time, and because of the stroke, I had lost all my math, and now I'm losing my eyesight. There's no way I can fly. I can test anything. I can't work anymore. So I'm pretty well stuck with no benefits because Social Security cuts me off, and I am fighting for my life pretty much. Family splits up, girlfriend goes away, of course, the house goes away, the car goes away, everything goes away, and you get down to a backpack and stuff in storage. And that's pretty much what happened. And I was still fighting for my Social Security. Got a lawyer, fought Social Security quite hard. It took 4 years and I won. I only won 2 years of back pay, which still left me broke because of all the loans and stuff I took out to survive. So I was still broke when I got my back pay, and pretty much had to survive from the streets. And the lucky thing is I was getting so tired because I suffered from extreme PTSD. So I was getting so tired of being on the street, losing the family, being pretty much homeless, and trying to fight back for, being blind. Luckily, one night when I was out on the street, after breaking up with the girlfriend and leaving and being on the street and having a backpack, the whole works, trying to feel my way around because the blindness was pretty bad back then too. I got stabbed pretty bad on the street, and they sent me to Palomar Hospital. And at Palomar Hospital, they got me in from there to Veterans Recuperative Care over in Escondido, where I literally found myself finally after all these years. And I started doing their programs and talking with their counselors, and I started seriously fighting back against the VA to get my VA benefits, and I'm still in that fight now. But I went through their programs and talked with other veterans, got reconnected with my brothers, which had taken me years to connect with people that were veterans for a long time because of what I went through.
And, you know, I think that's where I first met you, our Robert Garcia. And I think that's when things started looking up. And that's when you started to know that people actually care for you and love you. So talk to us about, you know, building a tribe and not being alone, you know, because that's something that we both know about is blindness and depression. So talk to us about finding your tribe again.
Well, you know, the biggest thing is when I was in that that homeless shelter, I was like, you know, there was a bunch of Vietnam veterans in there. And those guys, one of them was still fighting for his benefits since 1973. I could not believe it. I was amazed. And it made me feel not alone anymore. Because what I saw, I was totally isolated, alone, isolated, depressed, angry. You know, 30 years of carrying a couple murders, you know, in your memory is a hard thing to carry around, you know? And it was pretty hard. And so being able to talk with the other veterans there and knowing what their struggle was and knowing I wasn't alone and then working together to get resources, you know, helping them get on the computer and look up resources. They helped me, you know, at the time I was smoking pretty good on cigarettes. So they would give me cigarettes for showing them stuff. And I would go get their food or help them, you know, clean or whatever it was. I could help another veteran that was older than me. And it helped me get out of myself. And all of a sudden, I found out that I wasn't so alone, that the PTSD and the isolation and depression and things like that that were trying to get me killed, because pretty much I tried to commit suicide several times over my PTSD and my mental health status was not good. And being able to release my story, get help, get connected with other brothers who have been through similar circumstances, people who have seen similar things and experienced them, was the most healing out of everything. And knowing that I could stand back up. And so I started, you know, I was bored one day at the homeless shelter. I started doing these silly little videos because I used to be in a theater and I used to do a lot of commercial work and in my background and in my past and radio DJ stuff. And so I started doing that at the homeless shelter. And Robert Garcia from the Vetrepreneur Tribe, I guess saw one of those saw me in some way, saw my story, and he got involved. And that's where I met all you guys, getting reconnected. And I did not know there was a Vetrepreneur Tribe on Facebook. I did not know about social media at the time that well. And all of a sudden, getting involved in Facebook, getting involved in Instagram and all these TikTok and all these different medias wasn't just a connection for me. It was almost therapy for me. It was almost like I could literally get out of my shell without having to be present at the moment. You know what I mean? It was easier to be freer and talk with people and get my story out there and receive resources, but also give resources and just be part of the world again. And I think that's something that a lot of us veterans miss is being part of something. You know, whether it's, you know, part of a mission or part of a brotherhood or part of something where you're so used to working with others that when you stop working with others and you isolate and you're on your own with your own emotions and stuff, sometimes it can get pretty difficult. And so I found a lot of healing through being able to communicate whatever I was feeling without any physical judgment. You know, mental judgment. Yeah, you get all the nasty comments and stuff for people. Yeah, I've had others tell me, oh, Mike, you know, you're doing your silly videos. You're making yourself look like an idiot, blah, 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 you know. And then I have others saying that, hey, this really helped me. Thank you very much. You know, I'm glad I connected with you. And this video made my day, or this thing that you said really helped me out in the way of something I'm dealing with this week. And when I get those type of comments, it's just because I am passing on something I saw too. So it's being part of that circle of therapy is a wonderful thing.
So now talk to us about the boxes that you're making.
Yeah, I'm doing these custom cigar boxes. You know, they always say in our training, adapt and overcome to anything. And I've, you know, because of my sight, I can't do, and my memory on a lot of things, I can't focus and get things done. So what I did was I started painting just as a therapy. And all of a sudden, I guess there was a couple cigar boxes that someone donated to me, and I started just painting on them. And I found that I had a talent in that area. So I started doing custom cigar boxes. And what I do is I go around to old cigar shops and I buy up all their old cigar boxes that would have gone into the landfill. You know, it's a reusable resource. And so I instead of buying it from like a Walmart or a craft store, or Michael's or something like that, I actually buy the actual real cigar boxes. A lot of these are like, you know, the huge, you know, large, you go into the large humidors they have at a cigar shop, and you have all the cigars in those boxes, those really nice humidor boxes. I buy up all those. And then I custom laser burn them, and then I paint them, and then I sell them, I hope.
Now, have what kind of reactions have you got from the people that have bought your cigar boxes?
Oh, they love them. They love them. You know, there's a couple different markets there. There's the mom who wants it for sewing stuff and her keys and you know, curios and stuff like that. There's the kid, the stoner kids that are going into the smoke shops buying it for their weed. There's the retired veterans that are buying them for their veteran buddies, having them engraved, you know, with their service record on it and, you know, their service dates and stuff like that. There's all sorts of markets. So I've been getting a lot of response. I think the biggest response is that they like the painting of them and the colors. Not so much the designs, because I design it like right now I'm doing a whole series for a smoke shop. So I have to hit that market specifically. There's another series where I'm going to do 1920s Art Deco on it for gift shops, for flower shops, things like that. And then I'm going to be doing a Marine, Army, Navy, and Air Force cigar boxes for you know, graduations or for reenlistment gifts or upgrade in their status, you know, things like that, you know, gifts. So it's starting to hit. I just got started. When I won my Social Security battle, I took a lot of my back pay that I got and I bought laser etching equipment and I bought paints and I really heavily invested in something I knew was going to sustain me a little bit better than just watching all that money go away in the state of California. So
now, have you ever thought about one day making them look like footlockers from the prior military?
You know, you just awesome. Thank you for that idea. That's, I never thought about that, Richard. Wow. Yeah, that would be, you know what? I think I'm going to do one.
You know, I think, you know, just because a lot of guys miss their footlockers, you know, because for a lot of us, we lived out of a footlocker for years and years and years. So maybe that might be a hit, you know?
Yeah. I like that idea, man. I like that a lot, actually.
You know, a lot of people, like myself, you know, you and I, you know, we're both blind, but we don't let it, you know, like I don't call it a disability. I call it a thisability because it seems like everything else around me got heightened. Like my hearing got very heightened with my due to loss of vision. So that's why now I could do what I do now. And I love what I do. So please talk to us, you know, because a lot of guys and gals, they get out of the military, you know, they want to start a t-shirt company, a hat company, liquor company, or coffee company. And $10,000 later, they're, you know, they're in debt and they don't know what the hell just happened. So what are some advice you can give to these veterans that wants to become entrepreneurs?
If you're going to put your money into something, definitely. And this is one thing that we don't do. Well, a lot of us don't do. I've learned my lesson on this one is don't go head strong into it. You know, you may know what you're doing. You may really want to do it. You may really go, okay, this is going to work and I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And what happens is when you do it on your own and you spill your guts out into it, you end up with a very big mess. Study it first, talk to people who are already doing it, learn from them, get other people involved, listen to their advice, follow their advice. People like Robert Garcia, whenever I am dealing with anything to do with business or with setting myself up or getting ready, I listen to his seminars. I literally, if I had the money, I'd be hiring him. Going to different people like Daniel Curry. I hope I'm saying that right, because he's the guy I've been talking with, messaging off and on here and there about technical issues, computer issues, stuff like that. And among several other people, you know, for my emotional support and my get through the day, because every entrepreneur needs that, I go to Richard Kaufman, the comeback coach, for his stuff. You know what I mean, Richard?
No, but I think for people like myself, you, it's all about paying it forward. You know, it's all about giving back, even though we, you know, some of us, you know, have been crapped on, but we still keep on giving. Now, so what would you suggest for people that are in the military? I tell everybody to keep triplicates of every single piece of paper ever given to you and make sure you keep all your records. So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, my God, yes. If I didn't have the records I have right now, I quite literally I'm getting letters back from National Archives saying, sorry, we can't find you. And it's like, wait a second, I have this record right here. I have a bunch of forms and a bunch of records that I'm holding originals of. And they're like, well, I'm sorry, but it's been too long. And you were back in the early 80s. And I'm sorry, we're having a hard time finding anything on you or any of your records. So, yeah, luckily I kept every single envelope even. I didn't just tear the envelope open and, oh, here you go. No, no, I have the original envelopes to these records and, I mean, everything, because there's dates on it. And if you're having an issue with your benefits or having an issue like I'm having an issue and I have to find a lawyer, the whole works, but I have enough records and originals to where I can prove my statements, whether their records show it or not. And that's what you need to keep a hold of, because the VA, let me tell you, here recently, the VA, after years and years and sending me stuff to my new address, even sent me another notice here recently last week to an ex-girlfriend's house that I hadn't lived in about 10 years. And then a month before that, they sent it to another state where I was staying at like almost 30 years ago. So they play games. They send your stuff all over the place. They get the wrong address. They send you the wrong form. They say this agency needs to contact this other agency to get your forms, but I'm sorry, we can't find them. It's been too old, blah, 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 blah. And you go through all that and you go, yeah, sorry, I have the originals right here. So you still have a basis and an anchor to fight from. And that's what I've dealt with the VA so far. So, yeah, that's my opinion on that one, is keep your records and keep them safe.
All right. So now let's talk a little bit about, you know, recovery. Because if people know that listen to me, they know I'm a recovering drug addict with 32 years clean. And you went through some of your battles with addiction. How did you get started getting straight?
Well, with me, it was alcohol, and that was years ago. It's been, let's see, April 27th of this month, I'll be taking a 9-year token for my being sober. for 9 years. Before that, I had relapsed for a couple of years, and then before that, it was years of sobriety. You know, the hardest thing is when we're in the military and we're younger, we learn that either alcohol can take away the pain, can take away the frustration, can take away the boredom, and that is one of the common things to be accepted by. So as we're young and partying and being in the military, we learn that type of situation and habit to where now we do it when we're older, and now it's a problem. And I had to get away from that. So it took a while, but you can. My biggest suggestion is meetings, of course. Don't hang out in the barber shop. You won't get your hair cut. Meaning, if you don't hang out in bars and don't have people in your life that drink, then you will not end up doing it if you have an issue with it. Recovery, to me, is very important. It's something that has saved both myself, and I used to take my kids to meetings, and my kids now as adults go to meetings when they feel they're entroping on a issue in their life to where it might be a problem. They go to meetings. And so that's something that I got very lucky that at a very young age, I found recovery. It's not a weakness. I don't consider it a weakness whatsoever. I consider it strength when someone goes to a meeting, when they go to and they get involved with others and they say, look, how can I be of service to you? How can I help you out? How can I share my recovery so that I can keep it? Because we can't keep what we have unless we give it away. And that's one of the biggest things in my life is sharing recovery with other people. So, yeah, it's a big part of my life.
Okay, then I got to ask a question. Because, you know, like I said, I've been in recovery 30 years. And now that a lot of places are making medical marijuana available, I still can't do it because, you know, I'm in AA. So, obviously, I can't do it. But what are your thoughts on medical cannabis and stuff like that?
Well, unfortunately, there's such a big stigma on it. For me, I didn't want to do it whatsoever. I actually was against it for a long time. I was very against it. I was all, you know, no, it's a gateway drug, blah, 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 blah. You know, the whole works, because, you know, I'd studied, been an engineer my whole life, you know, went to college, the whole works. And I just didn't want to be involved in partying. And I put that as a partying thing. Now, let's come back up to 2009. And between 2009 and 2012, I had 149. Excuse me. I had 149 recorded seizures, really bad ones. I had a stroke that had left a major seizure activity in my brain, and there was nothing I could do to get over it. It was causing a lot of issues, plus my one eye that I have, it moves because of palsy. I have front lobar palsy, and so the one eye that I can see out of has something what they call micro square wave stagmus jerks, where I feel like I'm on deck of a ship all the time. It makes me extremely ill. So I'm on all these medications, 31 of them. Excuse me, I'm going to have to get some water. Okay, I'm on 31 different medications. Doctors don't know what's going on. I'm always having seizures, and someone introduces medical marijuana to me. I literally refuse to do it. Screw that. I'm not going to do it. A friend of mine forces me when I was in a wheelchair to have an edible, and I start moving again. And then after I start doing a regular regimen of medical marijuana, I start getting out of the wheelchair. And then I get off all the doctor's meds. It's been prescribed to me. It's the only thing that actually stops the seizures, they found out. So for me, there's a medical use for it. And then there's also misuse of it. I don't believe in recreational use, and that's one of the things that I don't believe in is recreational use. Medical use, yes, it should be used. My daughter has cervical cancer. We went through chemo. We went through all sorts of stuff. And then we turned to alternative routes because it started going on to her kidneys. And we thought, you know, if it's going on to her kidneys, we're going to lose my daughter. So went had to go through that emotional stuff. And we started doing the alternative route and found that cannabis literally saved her life. So there's for me, there's a, I guess, a moral dilemma in a way, because for me as an addict, as an alcoholic, it's a slippery slope to go into. But yet for me as a person with seizures, blindness, all sorts of stuff, it's literally saved my world where doctors couldn't. So it's sort of a, it depends on the situation, morals, how you were brought up, your medical situation. And, I don't know. It's a hard subject.
Okay.
Okay.
Last question. How do we order your boxes? And what can we do to support your mission?
Well, on my boxes, I haven't got a website up yet. I'm still working on that. So through my Facebook page, people can order them through me. There's also going to be a live shop, a brick and mortar shop here in Escondido, a place called Smoker's Haven. That's going to be dealing with my boxes. But if someone online outside my state wants to get one, all they have to do is take a look at them. Just Facebook message me for now, and I can sell them a box, let them know the price. Facebook Marketplace is where I'm putting them on there also. But like I said, here in about a month or so, I'll have a website coming. Don't know yet. I've been trying with GoDaddy to play around with it, but with the blindness, it makes it awful hard. I mean, I can paint and I can do things and I can get around, but I can only do it for so long. And then the one eye just gives me a migraine. So I can do I do about 4 to 10 boxes a day before the migraine hits. But as far as website design and things like that, it takes a lot longer for me to do that because of the I have to do it in spurts. I can't do it as all in one day, you know, because the eyesight is so bad.
Well, just to let you know that there's a something it's called Google My Business, and it's a free Google website that they give you. And it's so easy to operate, and it's free. So definitely check it out.
Oh, I'll check into that. Yeah, it'd be a lot easier doing that GoDaddy thing. Because I'm back in way back days when I was doing a front page and all that stuff. So that's way, way back. And now that I'm trying to get back into it again, it's a little difficult. You know, yeah. I'm getting older, you know.
It's called Google My Business.
Oh, I'll take a look at that. That sounds very interesting.
Yep. So now last question. You know, we live in a crazy world. We live in a COVID world where some grandparents are homeschooling kids. Parents are working two jobs just trying to feed their kids. So if I ask the average person to do something in the next 7 days, they're probably never going to get to it. But if I ask somebody to take an actionable step in the next 24 hours, they're more likely. So if there's somebody out there, especially veterans that are struggling right now, what is something that they can do to act in the next 24 hours to start to get some help?
You mean if they're struggling for emotional or,
you know, that, 'cause that's what we talk a lot about, depression, PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, and stuff like that. What is something they can do to in the next 24 hours to get help?
Well, there's several things they can do. One, the most important one, is if if you're a veteran out there that's feeling suicidal, get a hold of the national hotline. I don't have the number in front of me, but there's a national hotline for veterans suicide prevention. That's the first thing I would say is reach out, because it's not a weakness. That's one thing that's starting to get to me that I really wanted to make a main point on is a lot of vets, when I talk with guys, they think it's weak if they cry. They think it's weak if they show emotion. They think it's weak if they don't admit to their PTSD or things that are going on. They go, I can handle it. I'm going to isolate. I'm a big, tough guy. And unfortunately, that is something that the military drilled into us, to be tough, to overcome, to not worry about pain at that time, and to push through. But we're civilians now, and we're not at war. We're not in training. We're not in military service. We're civilian. And unfortunately, we still have those feelings of isolation, of no one needs to know, or the embarrassment of it, or the if someone sees I'm weak, that type of feeling. And it's okay that we have those feelings, but it's not okay to act on those feelings. We need to get out there and talk with people. Connect with your brothers. Call the local VFW. Call veteran hotlines. Get on the web. Talk with other vets. Just message. I mean, I've got guys that have messaged me out of the blue. I've got guys that have called me on my phone. You know, like, hey, man, I need to talk to someone. All right, it's 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. There's nothing going on. I don't have a chick with me. I'm single. So, yeah, why don't we just give a shout on the phone and talk for a while? And I've done that with guys. So if you're a veteran struggling, the other veterans out there need your strength. If you're struggling, then go out there and contact another veteran. Tell them you're struggling, because the strength from that can save another life also. Can help another veteran sort of come out of his own skin. That's the reason why I do my PSAs and I do those little videos and stuff I do, because I'm going through it. When I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm going nuts because of a bad dream or PTSD, I literally will do a video just to get it out of my own head so I could help another brother, let him know that he's not alone either. And in doing so, heals me. So that would be my suggestion. Get involved.
I love it, brother. Thank you so much for hopping on today. This will go out in a couple weeks. I'm so appreciative of your friendship. And just want to let you know I love you, brother.
Hey, man, Richard, you've been there from the beginning of this. You've seen me go from homeless to now what I'm doing. You know, I'm stable now, and I've got my business and stuff going. And you guys being there and making your comments and then doing your podcasts and helping others and just having me involved literally has saved my life. And I want to tell you thank you for that. And thank you for your strength through your blindness, because it gave me an example of how to get through something that I was having an issue with. So I very much appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, brother. Well, God bless, and thank you for everything you do, and we'll keep in touch.
Yes, definitely. You take care.
Be good.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.